is going to be covering some of the first chapters of Sri Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a book that was written by Sanatana Goswami, and traditionally with introducing some of the literature of our six Goswamis, some introduction of their who they are, biographical information is presented. And because of the extent of the subject, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, what I'm going to do, instead of taking some time now to give some biography about Sanatana Goswami, I'm going to pass something out to all of you at the end of this class. And it's a four-page, very nice summary, so that you can relish the glories of Sanatana Goswami. You can read it while you're here, or read it in your car on your way back to the different places that you've all come from. I'll just mention a couple of things. That Sanatana Goswami, he's on our altar, a picture of Sanatana Goswami and the six Goswamis as the chief disciples of Lord Chaitanya, particularly in the matter of fulfilling the mission of Lord Chaitanya by writing transcendental literatures and reestablishing the holy places of Vrindavan under Lord Chaitanya's order to do both of those things. Sanatana Goswami is an eternal associate, an eternally perfected liberated soul, one of the manjaris of Radha's entourage in the spiritual world, coming to perform a wonderful service in assisting Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes. This book, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, can be said, just say a few things about it. It's something like the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, as the story begins, you'll see why I'm saying that. So you see Srimad Bhagavatam sitting on a bookshelf, and it's a lot of understanding. So what is the essence of that? Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And Brihat Bhagavatamrita is divided into two parts. The first part is a description of the search of Narada Muni to understand the greatest recipient of the Supreme Lord's mercy. And that's what we're going to be looking at. And the second part is those who are the greatest recipients of the Supreme Lord's mercy, how do we get their association? That's part two. Brihat Bhagavatamrita is like a companion to Rupa Goswami's Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Laghu means light, and Brihat means great. So in Rupa Goswami's writing, he has established in Laghu Bhagavatamrita who is the Supreme Lord. And in Brihat Bhagavatamrita is the relationship, the relishing, the mellow of the relationship between the devotee and the Supreme Lord. To glorify Sanatana Goswami just a little bit, I want to read a couple of things. from the he wrote the book and wrote a commentary on the book, or he compiled. So the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, we're going to hear this as the text gets rolling, but it's a transcendental literature that is a corollary to the Mahabharata. You can say, like, the Sanskrit word is kilam, tat kilam. It's an addendum. Like, you write a book and you have an addendum that helps support the book. So it's an addendum, or kila. When our BBT, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, is going to be publishing this book, and that's the basis of what I'm going to be presenting. Charu Chandra already attended a 1 month course on the same subject matter, so it's a repeat, but I'm sure a relishable subject to hear over and over again. So Gopi Puranadana Prabhu has been commissioned by the BBT to translate the book and the commentary by Sanatana Goswami, and multiple persons are doing the editing. Jai Dvaita Swami and Keshava Bharati and different people are assisting. And it should be available. It's at the printer now. So it takes a while. 4 months, 6 months, something like that. Maybe if we're lucky, by the book distribution marathon, we'll have copies. So you can look forward to reading the details, because the subject matter is very, very, very intricate. There will not be time to cover the whole thing. I had to select, and it's very difficult to select out of so much nectar which to present. Anyway, so from the commentary itself, from the text, begins with 11 verses as the Mangala Charana. Mangala Charana, worshipping the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and his devotees in the Mangala Charana. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, what a Mangala Charana is and what its composition generally is, and it generally does three things. It indicates the glories of the Supreme Lord, or the primary deity worshipped by the author. It states the purpose of the book, second thing. And the third thing is that it offers benedictions to the reader, blessings for those who read or hear the subject matter. So I'm going to read the last verse of the Mangala Charana, written by Sanatana Goswami. Text 11. This book collects the essence of the scriptures teaching devotional service rendered to the Supreme Lord. These essential teachings I have personally realized under the shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I received them from his dear devotee, Sri Rupa. Now, when Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami, we read this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he blessed him that as he explained, he would simultaneously realize everything that he explained. Imagine that benediction, that everything that you've ever heard, you fully realized to the core of your heart, the meaning, very, very deeply. So what we're going to hear, Sanatana Goswami is stating, he's realized it. And he's giving credit to his younger brother for having explained it to him. Which shows one of the key features of a Vaishnava, and it's a very prominent feature in what we're going to be covering, is humility. Humility becomes very, you'll be hearing so many expressions of humility in this narration of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It starts right off the bat. The author himself is expressing that he's the elder brother. He's accepted by all as the senior most member of the six Goswamis. He's offering credit to his younger brother, Rupa Goswami. Actually, Prabhupada said, although Sanatana Goswami was the elder, Rupa Goswami was, I don't know how he expressed it, but was the superlative devotee. But Rupa Goswami accepted Sanatana Goswami as his guru. And here, the guru is accepting his younger brother and one who looks to him as his guru, as his instructor. This is the way of Vaishnava life. So, in Gopi Pranadana's purport, he's written, how has Sanatana Goswami been able to collect the gist of many devotional scriptures under one title? For years he diligently engaged his mind in studying many scriptures and engaged his heart in devotional meditation. He conducted this outward and inward search under the compassionate guidance and protection of the Lord of Consciousness, Chaitanya Dev, Lord Krishna's expansion as the Super Soul, Sri Vasudev. Srila Sanatana Goswami imbibed Lord Vasudev's mercy by meditating upon him and actively serving him the Lord's transcendental activities as the Supreme Person, Sri Krishna, Nanda Nandana, who enjoys playing his flute and whose charming body bends in three places. By the causeless mercy of Sri Krishna, one can fix one's attention on him and with higher vision see for oneself the purports of all revealed knowledge. And there's one other reference to Sanatana Goswami which I'd also like to read. Again, this is Gopi's purport. Srila Sanatana Goswami is a transcendental genius, an eternal resident of Goloka Vrindavan, and an intimate confidant of the personality of Godhead's internal pleasure potency. In other words, he's one of the manjaris in the spiritual world, appearing in this world to assist Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes of tasting the love of Radha for Krishna. Sanatana Goswami can easily perceive anything he wants to, in the past, present, or future, including lost scriptures from previous ages. If we have confidence in this, we shall discover in Srihad Bhagavatamrita more than the subtle sense gratification sometimes called nectar by immature devotees. Because this word amrita means nectar. So we hear devotees say that sometimes. Wow, that was nectar, Prabhu. So, Gopi's making a pun on this word nectar as amrita, that it's far deeper than what we call, we had a lot of fun. He's exploring and tasting and disclosing the transcendental happiness of relishing Krishna's association and sharing that with us. We shall learn how to discover our own eternal selves. So, Sanatana Goswami ki jai. So, the essential storyline of this part one is, putting it very simply, it gets complex, but Narada is on a search. He's on a quest. He wants to know who is the recipient of the greatest mercy of the Supreme Lord. And he goes from one person to the next, and it gives us something like a transcendental hierarchy of pure devotees. Like Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Devotion, there is perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. So the storyline goes, just you get a sneak preview of what's coming ahead. Narada meets one Brahmin, and he accepts that this first class devotee Brahmana is that greatest recipient, who then refers him to a king in South India as the greatest recipient, who then refers him to the devas, says they're far greater recipients, and amongst the devas, Lord Indra, who then refers him to Narada's father, Lord Brahma, who then refers him to Lord Shiva. And he goes to the abode of each of these places, meets with them and experiences and describes what he experiences. Lord Shiva says more intimate recipients of the Lord's mercy are the residents of Vaikuntha, and his consort Uma says, yes, you should see Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. And just as he goes off to see Lakshmi, Lord Shiva says, no, even more intimate and confidential is Prahlad. So he goes to the abode of Prahlad in Sutala, and Prahlad refers him to Hanuman, and Hanuman refers him to the Pandavas, and the Pandavas refer him to the Yadavas in Dwaraka, and the Yadavas in Dwaraka refer him to Uddhava, and Uddhava refers him to the residents of Vrindavan, and they all refer to the gopis. So now we can just say the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is the gopis are the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy, but a whole book is written rather than just saying that, for several reasons. One of them is we carry material conceptions. So we hear something like that, and what do we do with something like that? We can either say, that's great, and we imitate, or we can say, that's not so, that's imagination, or we can not really understand the subject matter, just accept in faith, and not really progress nicely. So, to help us progress nicely on the path of realizing the essence of what it means to be recipient of Krishna's mercy, a whole book is written. But that's the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, receiving Krishna's mercy, and then learning how to associate with those who are the recipients of Krishna's mercy. So we're in the practicing stage. We're way in the beginning stage. But advanced devotees like Sanatana Goswami are very merciful, and they're giving us a glimpse of associating with more advanced persons even before we're ready for that, to help prepare us for that. So just a couple other things, and I'll start narrating the first chapter. There's a refrain. It's something like in classical music. Subal knows a little bit about classical music. So in classical music, there's a refrain that keeps reappearing, and then you go off from the refrain and you come back to the refrain with different embellishments. But the essential refrain is there, and then another digression and another mood, and then back to the refrain. In Indian classical music also is like that. So there's a certain theme that reappears in this first chapter. And the theme is Narada gets inspired. Someone is the recipient of the Lord's mercy. He goes to that person and experiences, yes, it is so. He glorifies them. And they say, no, it is not so, not at all. But someone else is the greater recipient, is the real recipient of the Lord's mercy. And then it repeats. Same thing each time. Same theme. Same refrain. But it's not at all boring. It's a structure. And upon the structure, so many wonderful embellishments are decorating that structure. And the progression, although it's repetitious, it's not linear. So there's so many surprises and so many wonderful nuances and tastes and flavors, and it's not possible. I'll try to capture some of it enough to inspire you to read the book when it comes out. I'm telling you in advance, there's no way. Well, I'll tell you that one Keshava Bharati, who's one of the editors, told me, he's recently in America, he spent 2.5 weeks in Houston, and they had programs every evening in homes for about 2.5 hours, and he hardly finished the first part. It's a very relishable subject matter that's very, very deep, and we're going to have 4 classes, and I've already used half of one of them. But it's just to inspire you all, get you a little excited, not only to read the book, but to appreciate the richness. So I just want to share with you subjectively my appreciation from the readings that I've done. This literature has a very wonderful and natural way of drawing you into the subject matter. It's like a little kid going into a candy shop with a sweet tooth. It's just so exciting. It's just, you want to read further and further. It just, it draws, it not only draws you into the subject, but it draws you into the feelings of the subject, the moods of the devotees. And it's only possible because it's transcendental literature. Actually, Sanatana Goswami himself described that he did not compose the book. He held the pen, and the book was written. Madan Mohan, his deity, wrote the book, and he was the instrument for writing the book. He takes credit for writing the commentary, but Madan Mohan wrote the book. It's transcendental, it's like that, transcendental literature that's just, it churns your emotions, and it draws you not only to read more, but into the flavor of the subject matter. Another appreciation is, it gives an insider's view. It allows the reader to understand the mind and the feelings of great personalities. Not by guessing about them, but by their own disclosure. Very relishable. You feel intimately involved with those persons because of they're confidentially disclosing. Vedati pratigrinati guyam akyati prichati. They're sharing a loving relationship with everyone by the grace of Sanatana Goswami. Then there's one other thing that I'd like to say, and then into the story itself. On this matter of humility, it's an essential part of the text, and humility is, we know from Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, it's at the very beginning of the list of the items of knowledge, that purport for the verse, chapter 13, texts 8 through 12, 9 through 12. Humility and pridelessness. In the purport, Prabhupada says, complete attachment to the personality of Godhead and taking shelter at the lotus feet of a spiritual master. But that's not possible without humility. So humility is something that I know devotees wrestle with. Aside from people here in the room, I know some of whom are wrestling with the problem of humility. But it's everywhere. How do we deal with the fact that as we start to become a little bit purified, we recognize that we have so many shortcomings, and we recognize that we make so many mistakes. We recognize that we don't have sufficient regard and respect and gratitude for those that have been helping us, are helping us, and will continue to help us. And we're lacking in this whole area. Or the flip side is when someone comes before us and states something appreciating, offering some respect, offering some praise and gratitude, how do we digest that? We can be impersonalists and just put up a wall and zone out or something. But so this the position of a Vaishnava's humility. If we're not on the transcendental platform, it's a big problem. And as I was reading this material, I just happened to look at some of the thousands of books on Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's bookshelf, because that's where I'm staying. And I noticed one title that fits in with his subject. I'm just a little digression. Healing the Shame That Binds You. It's about the author is someone who was an alcoholic, and he just felt so much shame, which drove him to more alcoholism. And then he felt more shame, which drove him to more alcoholism, and then other aberrant behaviors, and it was just he was in a rut and couldn't get out of it. But I know lots of people, not alcoholic devotees, but devotees that are in a rut with their feelings of humility or shame because they're not what they want to be or other people expect them to be or so many things. And they have the same repetitious problems and don't know what to do about it. And it's real stuff. Or there's pride, the absence of humility, and that gets the person into all kinds of problems, all kinds of very embarrassing problems. But a devotee is supposed to be humble. How to not be cuckoo with all this business of what is genuine humility? Now, the approach that this person takes is, well, in short, it's an atheistic one. And that doesn't work. Ultimately, it doesn't work. So we're getting a very wonderful approach by a transcendental personality, Sanatana Goswami, how different devotees deal with their moods of humility. And I can say one thing that they don't do is they don't become discouraged and fall into ignorance and lament about things. Our means of purification is devotional service. So part of humility, the core of humility is honesty. Or just being straightforward with ourselves. And you'll see how straightforward these devotees are with other devotees. So it's not just that I'm straightforward with myself about my limitations, but I conceal everything to everybody else. I've got two personas. One that's me, at least I think it's me, because I spend a lot of time doing the other one. I sometimes get lost in the other one. These devotees in Brihad Bhagavatamrita consistently are humble and consistently are very straightforward about their shortcomings and limitations. But their business is glorifying those more elevated devotees, aspiring for their association, aspiring to respect them. But so there's never the feature of envy in their dealings of humility. So we'll be exploring this a little bit more. I want to read two things that are right from the text. One of them is by the king. The king is speaking. When Narada is sent by the Brahmana to the king, and the king says, "Who am I but a wretched person? How much charity am I able to give? What opulence do I have? And how have I ever reciprocated with the Supreme Lord in devotional service?" Actually, I meant to read the other one first, but anyway. Reciprocation with the Lord is part of the essence of a Vaishnava's position. The king is reciprocating, but in his mood of humility, he's seeing he's not reciprocating sufficiently. But he sees it that I'm not reciprocating. And how many of us feel that we're not sufficiently reciprocating with the Lord? Take stock, take an inventory of the gifts that we've been given, material and spiritual. And are we sufficiently reciprocating with the Lord? And if we're not, how do we deal with that? So Gopi's commentary: any true devotee of Krishna considers himself insignificant, thinking himself one of the countless jivas who are mere sparks of God's splendor. The devotee is sorry for having foolishly rebelled against his creator. And reflecting on this rebellion, he thinks that his relative influence amongst other fallen jivas means very little. Humility. And one more paragraph, and then the story begins. For a devotee to feel dissatisfied with himself is a natural part of devotional service. Humility is natural. Here we find Indra expressing natural humility. And the other Vaishnavas Narada will meet will speak similarly. Each devotee thinks that Lord Krishna only seemingly favors him, but really acts to satisfy devotees who are dearer. When someone praises a devotee for being a recipient of the Lord's mercy, the devotee normally, the one who's being praised, tries to refute the praise. But even if he sometimes doesn't, for that we should not fault him. So, Vaishnava humility. This will come as a refrain, and we'll speak some more about it as we go along. So the part one, each of the two parts, part one and part two, they have seven chapters, and the first chapter is entitled Boma, and that's what we're going to discuss right now. So Brihat Bhagavatamrita begins just after the Mangalacharana with Jaimini Rishi speaking. Those of you that like to take notes, Jaimini Rishi is speaking to Janamejaya. Now, who's Jaimini Rishi? Jaimini Rishi is one of the disciples of Vyasadeva. He was entrusted, when Vyas divided the Vedas into four, he was entrusted to be in charge of the Samaveda. And the Samaveda, particularly amongst the four Vedas, has more inclination towards appreciation of devotion in service to the Lord, as opposed to the balance of karmakanda activities, where it's not so much activity out of devotion to the Lord, but with some remuneration, some worldly benediction coming back. Jaimini Rishi was in charge of Samaveda. Jaimini Rishi was present when Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. And one of the prominent things of Jaimini Rishi that he's known for is his glorification of the deity form of Lord Jagannath. So he's speaking to Janamejaya. And who knows who Janamejaya is? Yeah? Go ahead.
Son of Maharaj Parikshit.
The son of Maharaj Parikshit. Exactly. So he became king after Maharaj Parikshit. And he's a pure devotee, like his father. So he wants to hear about his father, Maharaj Parikshit, and his ancestors at this time, the Pandavas. He wants to hear that. And so he's requested Jaimini Rishi to narrate Mahabharat. So Jaimini Rishi has just finished narrating Mahabharat, and Sanatana Goswami explains, it's It's another addition besides Vyasadeva's. So apparently there was at least one other bona fide form of Mahabharata. And specifically in comparing the two, Janamejaya says, this narration of Mahabharata that you've just given is so relishable. I appreciate it so much differently than the other one that I've heard. And Sanatana Goswami explains, Vyasadeva's audience was everybody. Striyo Vaishas Tata Shudras Tepiyanti Paramgatim. Everybody. So he, as a result, Vyas concealed to some degree the supremacy of Krishna and spoke of him more in terms of his position as the friend and the relative of the Pandavas and sometimes their order carrier. And through this method he also has, one of his biggest concerns was describing morality and ethics for conducting codes of life. But Jaimini Rishi's Mahabharata, same subject, but with a different audience. It was a devotee audience. So as a result, the Supreme Lord Krishna, his supremacy is the focus. And the relish of the activities of serving the Supreme Lord was the focus. So after hearing that Mahabharata, Janamejaya says, ooh, can you speak something more? And Jaimini Rishi says, very well, I can speak something more. I'll speak that which is the kila of Mahabharata. So again, Sanatana Goswami explains this kila, it's like an appendix or a supplement, and he explains that Srimad Bhagavatam has its kila, and that's the Hari Vamsa. So Hari Vamsa parallels Srimad Bhagavatam, and it just takes the same subject and it goes in an essence form, relishing the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the essence form, or the kila, the supplement of Mahabharata. So Jaimini Rishi starts the narration of the supplement and says, so it's something like, so we get a picture in our mind. The Srimad Bhagavatam starts with Suta Goswami speaking, and the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka, they're asking questions. So the counterpart here is Jaimini Rishi is speaking something that he heard, and the son of Maharaj Pariksit is asking the questions. He said, very well, I'll tell you this wonderful narration. It's the narration of a discussion between Maharaj Pariksit, your father, and his mother, your grandmother. Who's the mother of Maharaj Pariksit? Uttara. So Jaimini Rishi says, when Shukadeva Goswami had finished speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, it was the seventh day, but the snake bird had not come yet. So Maharaj Pariksit was just sitting there waiting for the event to happen, the bird to come and snake bird to come and bite him. And he was looking around in the audience and he saw his mother, and she was crying because she knew her son was going to die very soon. So he called her forward and spoke some transcendental understandings to her that calmed her down, pacified her motherly affections. And so she became calm. He said, essentially said, my dear mother, what I've heard from Shukadeva Goswami has completely freed my heart from all fear. I'm ready to pass on to the spiritual world. Please do not mourn, but understand the well-being of the soul is about to be achieved. So then Uttara said, since those understandings that you received from Shukadev Goswami have given you this peace of mind, can you tell me what you've understood from him? And Shukadev Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit replies that at a time like this, normally one is silent and meditates very deeply on those messages that one has heard. But because your question is so relishable and so important, I'll express to you the essence of what I've heard. The essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is what he's about to explain. But there's very little time, so I'll have to do it in a story form. And then he begins narrating the story. He tells the story of some sages who were assembled in Prayag, or now Allahabad, a sacred place, and they were there during the month of Magh, during the full moon of the month of Magh. It's said to be a very, very special time for taking bath in the confluence of the Triveni, the three rivers. And so the sages had taken their bath, and they were sitting by the bank of the rivers, like devotees will do sometimes, just relishing how fortunate they are to be in this very, very sacred holy place on this very special day. And they were really enjoying spiritual life, and as devotees will sometimes do, they were appreciating one another's good qualities. You know how devotees will get, especially after they've had a feast. They get very lighthearted, or a nice kirtan, and they'll start to appreciate one another. Oh Prabhu, you're such a great devotee. And the other one say, no, but he's a great devotee. So they were doing that. And while they were doing that, one very wealthy Brahmana, Vaishnav, came right there by the Shashvamedha Ghat in Prayag. Conveniently or coincidentally, the Shashvamedha Ghat is the exact place where Sanatana Goswami was instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he came with his whole entourage. He was now imagine actually being in a situation like this. You know, CNN, you're there, the cameras are, you know, just to carry yourself to that place. In a holy place, just that you're feeling so fortunate to be in the holy Dham, some place of pilgrimage and fulfilling there's a verse in the Padma Purana. Lord Madhava says in Padma Purana that no one can please me as much by penances or austerities or sacrifices or good works as much as bathing in these sacred waters on the full moon of the month of Magh. And they had done that, and they knew the verse, and they had faith, and they were feeling so happy. And this Brahmana comes, and he, right by the bank of the Ghat, he sets up an Abhishek. He sets up a little altar. He takes cow dung and smears the cow dung. He takes water from the Jamuna, water from the Ganga, and water from the Saraswati, and sprinkles it, and makes his place all sacred and sanctified. Puts his Shalagram Shila in place, and with great opulence begins this ceremony. And it's like a one-man show. He sings and he dances, and he offers mantras, and he offers the Abhishek, and he gets up and starts singing and dancing again. And gold, jewels, precious ornaments, very rich fabrics, and big offerings of family members. They're all preparing wonderful foodstuffs and big offering of, like we do in our temples, you know, big maha offering Anukut. And when the arati is finished, after the Abhishek, he takes all the food and distributes to all the persons around the place, and gets into the details of how he feeds all the animals with his own hand, even the insects. For some reason that's mentioned. In other words, everyone, he wants to see that the mercy of the Supreme Lord is given to everyone. And when everyone is fully satisfied and he distributes all the gold and jewels and cloth and in huge amounts, then with his family members he sits down and they honor the prasad of the Lord. And then he goes before the deity with folded hands and he offers, this is very significant as far as the story goes, he offers a prayer that if there's any benefit that I've derived by performing these activities, I offer all the results to you. In other words, Sanatana Goswami indicates non-motivated bhakti. He didn't do it because the gesture was, I'm not doing this for the purpose of pious credits, you take them all. And amongst the sages that were sitting there watching this whole show is Narada. And Narada just becomes ecstatic seeing this whole thing. And he jumps up and runs forward to the Brahmana and says, you, my dear Brahmana, are the recipient of the Lord's mercy for sure. And he gives his reasons. Basically, there are two reasons that he offers why he's making this declaration. He says that your opulence is so great that you can't even conceal it. So the explanation is that some people, they like to show off a little bit of opulence. Some persons try to conceal their opulence for miserly reasons or whatever their reasons. But this Brahmana was so opulent, it was impossible for him to conceal his opulence in terms of his actual wealth. And we've all had this experience, just being in the presence of someone who's so pious and so opulent, just walking in the room or there, just being in their presence, you can see. So this Brahmana was like that. He said, but you're with this opulence, you're such a charitable person, you're always in this generous mood. And the second reason he gives is that you apply this generosity to promote pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. That is your objective. And so surely you are the recipient of the Lord's mercy. So this is our refrain. And the Brahmana, hearing Narada's praise, is not moved by it. He said, recipient of the Lord's mercy, I'm nothing but a wretch. Oh, I read this actually. What opulence do I have? What charity can I give? It's insignificant. And then he further said, how have I reciprocated with the mercy of the Supreme Lord? In other words, his giving of items to the Supreme Lord, is that reciprocation with the Lord's mercy? Is that really what reciprocating with the Lord's mercy is about? You just give things? He said, actually, I'm not the recipient of the Lord's mercy at all, but if you want to find one who truly is, I know one who truly is. There's one king. And I can tell you about this king, and once I tell you about this king, you'll definitely want to go meet him. And he gives several reasons why he's convinced that this king is the recipient of the Lord's mercy. There's seven items. If you like to take notes, I'll help you take the notes. The first item is he glorifies the residents. Residents, the persons who live there. He said, because he's such an exalted personality throughout his whole kingdom, so many saintly persons live there. And you speak about my charity, but you go to this kingdom of this king, and it's a constant festival. It's a non-stop festival of worship and offerings of charity of those items that have been presented in the worship. It's constant. And the third thing is his deity. I have this little shalagram, Shiva. But this king, the deity that he worships, is so potent and so attractive that, like other deities that are also stationary, his deity is stationary, but everyone sees the deity as actually the form of the Lord. In fact, they relate to the deity in that exact way. You should go and see this deity. And the agriculture, fourth item. The agriculture in the king's whole kingdom is nobody has to do anything. It just, everything grows on its own. They don't have to plow the fields and plant the seeds and harvest. Everything just comes of its own accord. Rain comes in a natural way, just in the right amounts. And everything grows very naturally. In Gopi Pranandana's commentary, I'm sure it's not, well, I don't think it's in Sanatana Goswami's commentary, he accounts that in the Adam and Eve story, before the fall of Adam and Eve, that was what it was like. In other words, in the like heaven, or before the fall, that everything was produced of its own accord. After the fall, by the sweat of his brow, things were produced by karma, by fruitive work. But the king is not on the platform. The citizens are not on the platform of fruitive work. They're on the platform of pure devotion. And as citizens, the fifth item, the citizens are all perfect in the discharge of their social duties. Their varna and ashram duties are perfect. Their devotion is perfect. They're perfectly obedient to the king. They love the king. And there's no social anomalies. Hard to believe, right? That's this king and his citizens. And although he has all of these wonderful features in his kingdom, the next item is, he's prideless. He doesn't think, oh, what a great king I am. Because this is one of the dangers of being having some success in one's activity as one becomes proud of that success, but he has no pride. Rather, he just absorbs himself in his devotion. And he's constantly engaged in that way. And he's so prideless that he's put the kingdom in the name of his deity. Now, Prabhupada told the story of one king some 500 years ago, King Shivaji, is its actual story, someplace in Maharashtra, where he had a guru whose name was Ramdas, and one day the king, standing on the roof of his palace, was looking out and saw his guru playing on some stringed instrument, singing the glories of Ram, going from door to door and begging alms. And it struck the king, what is this? He's my guru, and he's begging alms, and I'm sitting in a palace. What's that? So he wrote something on a piece of paper, folded the paper over, gave it to his minister and said, go to your home. And when Ram Dass comes to your door, just give this to him. And so when he came to his door, he gave the paper, and the guru read the paper, and the paper said, I am your disciple, and therefore whatever is my property is your property. The kingdom is now yours, it's no longer mine. So that evening, the guru came to see his disciple, Shivaji, and said, very well, the kingdom is no longer yours, therefore you're no longer the king, you're my disciple, so tomorrow you come and assist me. You carry the bag. Where are the alms that are being collected? You can assist me and I can just sing the glories of my Lord. So the king did that. The next day, he went as the alms carrier for his guru. And he went all throughout for the whole day, door to door. And the citizens were astonished. The king is begging door to door. So at the end of the day, they were seated by a river. And the guru said to the king, or to Shivaji, his disciple, you've satisfied me very nicely by taking this humble position. And so now I give the kingdom back to you. But it's not yours. It's yours to manage, and it's the property of the Lord, because anything that's mine is the property of the Lord. And what you give to the Lord, you can't take it back. So you manage it, but in that mood, that this is the Lord's property, your guru's and Krishna's property. So like that, this South Indian king had literally placed, I mean, this is a big issue for kings, this is my kingdom. But he put the title of the property in the name of the deity. So he's completely prideless. And the final glory of this king, spoken by the Brahmana, is all his family members also, by his influence, anyone that comes in contact with him becomes similarly devoted. So with that, Narada was very excited, and he went off to visit the king. Yeah. So the rationale, two important points just as a comment. The rationale, the Brahmana by social position, by Varna, is above the Varna of a king. But the Brahmana was humble. The Brahmana was seeing, it's not because I'm a Brahmana and he's a Kshatriya, he's better. He's better. And why is he better? I give in charity, but he gives much more in charity. And the second reason is, not only charity, but he has qualities that I don't have. And I'll speak a little bit more about this in a moment. But these qualities, they're spiritual. The position of what one's duties are in this world, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they're worldly things. He was appreciating that the king and his citizens have spiritual qualities that I don't have. And sure enough, when Narada went there, that's the first thing he experienced. That the citizens, they were engaged, just like he had said, in the continuous festival of worship and glorification of the Lord. And so he came running before the king, offering his, this is Narada, respecting the king, saying, you are the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. And he gave these same reasons. Your kingdom is completely opulent. And not only that, your citizens are of ideal character. So I'm going to explain this, and this is going to be the end of this evening's class. But the importance of Vaishnava qualities is something, it's one of my favorite topics. And it comes right here in this text, and it's actually a refrain as the levels of perfect, more perfect, most perfect are being extolled. It's in terms of qualities. Because already the Brahmana has shown that he is in the position of non-fruitive work or not motivated service to the Lord. And everybody thereafter has similar glory. But the qualities of the citizens is what Narada was focusing on. Your citizens are so great. He said specifically, they're of excellent character, their religiousness, their knowledge, their prosperity, and their devotion to God, they're all impeccable. So he's judging the king, the qualification of the king, based on the qualification of the followers of the king. The Prabhupada also said the same thing, that he was pleading with us and maybe admonishing us as his disciples that we should be good followers, because whatever our qualities are, it will reflect upon him. So it's these two points I want to make. One is that in order to be proper representatives of those who are receiving the gift of bhakti, in order to show, like the king was saying to Narada that he wasn't doing, that he wasn't reciprocating properly with the Supreme Lord, for us to reciprocate properly with the Lord and the representatives of the Lord who are being very merciful upon us, we should be very careful in the maximum way that we can to represent their teaching. I got the wrong sign. There's a sign in Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's room, the house where he stays. And it's taken from the Gita Nagari prophecy. It says that the way to honor a great person after their departure is not just to make a statue of them and offer some flowers and some praises, but rather to establish a community of persons that exemplify the values taught by that great person. Very profound. We can glorify Srila Prabhupada more by establishing the Sangha of Vaishnavas that exemplify his teachings, more so than the Vyasasan and offerings of flowers. And we must do that, but it's much greater to establish, and it's much more work to imbibe the qualities that Srila Prabhupada taught and live in association with one another according to those qualities. That's the greatest glorification. And how to do that? Well, one of the topics during our seminar this weekend is applying instructions, which means including imbibing the values and qualities that are in Prabhupada's teachings. And you can't do that in an ordinary way, just like paint it another color or something. It's not a simple thing. It's not a cosmetic thing. It's something that has to go very deep. This morning, for those of you that were in transit on your way here, and those of you that were horizontal because of the trip last night, getting here, we discussed the verse, kind of the invocation for this course was the verse from First Canto, Narada's instructions to Vyas to compile Srimad Bhagavatam, Tad Bhagva Sargo Janataga Viplavo Yasmin Pati Shlokam Abhadyavatsvapi. The last line, Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadavaha. I like this verse very much. Shrinvanti, hearing, Gayanti, glorifying, and Grinanti, internalizing, bringing within the core of our heart, which is exactly what Gopi was saying, how Sanatana Goswami realized the essence of the scriptures. Is he read them and he contemplated on them very deeply. And in service to Lord Chaitanya and his dear brother Rupa Goswami, he made it his life. Internally, as well as externally. And so part two is, when we have those qualities, and this fits in with the theme of Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when we have those qualities, we attract the mercy of the Lord. That's what the Brahmana is saying about the king. He attracts the mercy of the Lord because he has those qualities. Because he has those qualities, his citizens have those qualities, and his relatives have those qualities, and is distributing this pure devotion to others because he did it. He internalized those qualities. And as our class this morning said, that means then the atmosphere of Kali Yuga becomes minimized. The atmosphere, we may not make everyone a devotee, but the atmosphere of Kali Yuga becomes minimized if we can do that one thing. Develop Vaishnava qualities. Humility, pridelessness, tolerance, simplicity, cleanliness, truthfulness, and all those items that are mentioned in chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. So, taking shelter of the lotus feet of spiritual master and worshipping the personality of Godhead in undivided devotion, in a mood of humility, receiving the training from those who are very dear to the Lord, opening our hearts to that training and taking that training within, taking those messages within, means having the qualities that the king has, that the Brahmana is saying, I don't have, and therefore he's the greater recipient of the Lord's mercy. So, I'll end with that, and give you a prelude to tomorrow's class. Tomorrow, we're going to hear the king redirects the attention of Narada to the devas, and then there's the hierarchy of devas, and then that's the second chapter, and the third chapter is beyond the material world in the liberated region. We're only at chapter 3 and there are 7 chapters. It gets real exciting. Okay, so there's time for some questions. My watch is wrong. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
How does Narada respond to the, when Brahmana said,
the expressions of humility?
Yeah.
He doesn't refute it. In some cases, as he goes along, he becomes quiet because he feels that maybe he's offended the personality he's speaking to and tries again. But then gets carried away and then the reputation comes again. And then sometimes there's some back and forth like that. But in many cases, because shortly or immediately after, the flow of the dialogue is, after refuting the claims of Narada of there being a recipient of the Lord's mercy, he refers to another who is. And Narada goes with the flow and goes to that next person.
Narada is really getting inspired to say that.
Yes, Narada gets inspired. Now, one can think, you know, what's going on? Narada is not anyone's fool. When he hears about opulence, you know, the Brahmana is the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy because he's so opulent, he knows that that's not, so it's just that that's material wealth, and what's that? But he's appreciating that not only he has the wealth, but he's completely detached. He's very, very free and generous, and he wants to use it for pure devotional service, purpose. which is something that we need to cultivate in our stage of bhakti. So when we see that, when we see persons that have that quality very strongly, ooh, it's strong. You are such a devotee. Because that's essentially, he's not saying, you are such a great devotee, but that's what he's saying. Who's the greatest devotee of Krishna? That's the question. But it's being said, what makes a devotee great? It's receiving the mercy of the Lord. So you are the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. Subtle, but it's very nice. Yes, Sanjay?
What was the motivation behind Narada's quest to find out who the greatest
devotees? His motivation is like that of you and me. He likes to associate with those who are dear to the Lord. He likes that. We like that. He's a devotee. He likes to associate with those who are receiving the Lord's mercy. At one point, he says to Prahlad, I was cursed by Daksha, and I was also cursed by one demoness, both that I would not be able to stay in one place for a long time. But I just want to stay here with you. And you're such an exalted devotee. I'm sure that your spiritual greatness will overcome that curse. And I'll be able to stay here with you. I just don't want to go anywhere. I just want to be with you. We want to be in the association. And Narada wanted to be in the association of such personalities. Loka Dyaksha.
Does Narada actually accept this hierarchy as he progresses through his search? And the second question is, how should we accept this hierarchy?
So one of the, thank you for asking that question. One of the things I wanted to say at the very beginning is the objective is to glorify the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. One of the ways, so this is what Narada is doing. One of the things that Narada is doing is by appreciating those who are lesser than the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, but truly the recipient of the Lord's mercy. In the comparative, once you get to the superlative condition, then you can really appreciate like you couldn't appreciate unless you went through that exercise of the position of the gopis in depth. So that's one of the purposes of Narada. They think that's how we can take it. I would say there are some practical purposes for us that we can take also, and that is like the brahmana. It's the description of the glories of the brahmana are something that, as I mentioned, we need to work on in real practical terms of whatever asset, not just wealth, anything that we have, how do we see it? Do we want to be the enjoyers of it? Do we want to be the enjoyers of rendering that in some way in service to Krishna? The piety that will come, or the claim, the fame, the recognition, you know, what's it? How are we going to deal with our practices in devotional service? So, but then there's other levels that will follow in subtler and subtler and subtler ways. So it gives us a map before we get there. Well, we're struggling maybe with some of this lower stuff, how to anticipate some of the subtler stuff. And by this method of ultimately glorifying all devotees, but particularly glorifying the gopis, it helps us do that with a pure heart. Anyway, those are some thoughts I can share on that subject. Bayahari, you had a question?
I just
Narada Muni is considered to be one of the greatest devotees.
He's
intimately knowledgeable with each of these people. And as Gopi Pranadana comments, because he's a renunciate, he's accustomed to being in so many circumstances and adjusting to those circumstances and being quite flexible and fluid in those various circumstances. He's very accommodating. And his purpose is to be the transmitter of glory, of glorification. That's his function. And like Sanjay's question, he wants to be with those who are receiving the Lord's mercy. He really wants that. So he's playing that role. So I think we have to end. At least the schedule is that we should end, and there's a short arati, and the schedule is bhajans, yes? Yeah. To be continued tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Shri Radha Damodar ki.